Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and today I am joined by the lovely Betsy Devine and the lovely Katrina Vahedi, and we are going to be talking to you today about ricotta, specifically Salvatore ricotta, which Betsy has been making for the past how many years?
3 years.
3 years. And it is an amazing cheese. And so we're going to talk to her a little bit about how she started her business and about the delicious cheese itself. But before we do that, because this is a cheese that does kind of inspire poetry and awe in many a people or many a person who eats it, Katrina and I have taken the liberty during some slow time at the cheese shop today of composing some poems about the ricotta.
I've not heard it yet. I asked them if it was dirty and they didn't give me a straight
dirty
answer.
It's all about cheese.
Well, buckle your seatbelt, lady, because
I'm ready. Lay it out.
So there once was a Tuscan ricotta, and these ladies, they liked it a lotta. They learned to make cheese that was sure to please. Try it smoky or plain. You just gotta. The first of many limericks and poems to come.
Good work, ladies. I'm glad to see, you know, you're working hard.
We're selling booth. Cheese and composing poems.
We are earning our keep.
All at the
no
same
doubt,
time.
No doubt. Well done.
So we're going to pepper the show with random poems, both limericks and haikus, because Katrina, as a linguistics major before turning to cheese, was mentioning that the haiku is actually not even what...
It's not truly syllabic, it's moraic. So
explain that. You lost me at, like,
I lost you at hello.
Syllabic.
There's a smaller piece, a smaller rhythmic piece than a syllable, and that's a mora. So you can have small syllables or larger syllables, and the size is based on how many mora they contain. So in a true haiku, you count the mora, not the syllable. So
really?
You might... We always think of a haiku as being 5, 7, 5 syllables, but it could actually be, like, 4, 7, 5 or 3, 7, 5, depending on the size of those syllables and their components.
Wow.
So these are not true moraic haiku. They are just syllabic haiku, which will be more familiar to us as English speakers.
Do you have some, like, linguistics professor that's going to call in and yell
God,
at
I
you?
God, I hope not. I didn't pass out the number, so.
That was not a true mora.
Fail.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Tell us a little bit about Betsy, how you came. Well, actually, let's talk a little bit about your culinary background. First of all, are you Italian?
There's a little Italian in me. I don't think there's as much as I would like there to be, but what there is, I embrace. Okay. I'm mostly, like, from the land of the limericks.
So this is quite fitting then.
Exactly.
Good. So,
yes.
We didn't even know. I didn't know.
We should think about that with all of our guests in the future. Where are they from? What kind of poetry can we compose for them?
Right, verse. Right. I think that's going to might be a second career for you guys.
All right. So you're mildly Italian, but you're highly steeped in Italian cooking.
Before I started this project, I was in the cooking world, and it wasn't necessarily geared towards Italian, but, you know, once one is cooking, there's a lot of Italian influences, French, you know, all over the world. But that's kind of my background, and that's where this project was born out of. Just, I think it could have happened anyways, but when you're a cook and you try something, your next step is to try to replicate it. And that's what happened with the cheese. I tried it at Salvatore's in Ateca, which we can talk about later, in Italy. And we got back home. I couldn't find it on the market. I tried to, my next step was like, well, maybe I can make it.
Yeah.
And we did it at our house. And it turned out pretty well. We liked it.
Well, so that's interesting. So you didn't start off with the notion of wanting to become a cheesemaker. You went and visited Italy and met this crazy, crazy cat named Salvatore, and he kind of inspired you guys?
Yeah.
Had you ever thought about making cheese before at all?
Not at all. I mean, this whole like cheesemaker thing, yeah, I feel like it's not even fitting. Like, I don't know that I am that. I feel like I'm just kind of following something that I really like. And I don't know. Like, we didn't expect it at all. It fell on our laps, and here we are.
That's the best thing. I always say that, too. If somebody would have told me when I was 18 that I was going to, like, spend the rest of my life selling cheese, I would have been like, get the fuck out. Like, no way.
Totally. Yeah. It's so weird. I mean, that's life. That's
you
how
never
it
happens. Know. You never know what's going to do.
Yeah, you wake up and you're like, wait a minute. How did I get here?
So how did you find this guy Salvatore in the first place?
The short story is my wife, Rachel, who may join us in a minute, is like fabulous. And one of her greatest charms is like she can chat up anything.
It's true.
Including, nice. She might kill me for saying this, like a wall. and we went into this Enoteca. She met the owner and just kind of hit it off with him. And the owner was Salvatore.
And where was this Enoteca?
In San Gimignano.
Enoteca, beautiful is just, town.
Is that just a restaurant or a bistro or what?
It's basically like the Italians were so cool because they combine the wine shop with the eatery. Okay. And it's called the Enoteca. He has this place. And actually, there's a little bit of a misconception with like our ricotta. Like, people always think that Salvatore taught us to make it, and in fact, he kind of didn't. He, when we ate at his Enoteca, he served us ricotta that he didn't make, but it just kind of, you know, it made an impression, obviously, but he also made an impression. This is why, like, we named the company after him, was, like, he was just and is the coolest guy and, like, just kind of embraces that. I don't know, lust for life.
And joie de vivre.
Exactly.
Is there an Italian expression for that?
I was trying to think of the Italian like translation, but...
Molto vivace?
Yeah, molto bene. I don't know, but he's got it in like...
Buono vivace.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, that's more than like this particular product that we're making, like in his name, like... We wanted to name our entire like concept over about or we wanted to name it for like that kind of idea.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what made his Enoteca so special? Like when you walked in, what was it like?
He made it special. I mean, he's there every day of the year. Wow. We've been to his house subsequently. Like, we've come to know him quite well, and he lives in this, like, house that's, like, approximately, like, 4,000 years old. and it's literally, like, medieval. And it's not, it's, like, the coolest house I've ever seen, but it's not, like, fancy for there. It's, like, kind of just, like, this normal house. And he wakes up in the morning, like, says goodbye to his wife, who's fantastic, and his two kids. He, like, plucks rosemary out of his yard and like thyme, like brings that down to the shop and like just is there every day and serves these like it's simple food like you know you'd expect in Italy, but it's just like there's something about like him being there, it's made from the heart, that is kind of like special.
Yeah That reminds me of, did you ever see the movie Vitus?
No.
Anybody? Oh man, it's kind of a dorky movie. It's good. It's about this little. It's a movie that came out a couple years ago, and it's in German. But it's about this little kid who's kind of this piano virtuoso genius, and you know, he's, as a result of his talent, he's kind of a little asshole, and like no one really likes him that much, and so he. You know, he has a hard time fitting in, but the one person who really understands him is his grandpa, who's kind of this old kook, and he, you know, wants to fly airplanes and like do all this crazy stuff, and he's like that. He like wanders through town and like picks flowers in people's front yards, and like, anyways, when you're talking about Salvatore picking the rosemary and thyme from his front yard, I was thinking about this scene in the movie.
I mean, there's something so cool about it, and like I feel like, I don't know, my experience has never really been like that growing up in, like, I don't know. I don't want to be as bold as to say America, but, like, where whatever my experience was, it's not that cool. It's like you go to the Stop and Shop or whatever.
We don't have that connection. Absolutely. Exactly. Or that community. Like, the whole act of pulling something out of your front yard and then serving it to your townspeople or your, you know.
Everyone's going to say, oh, is that safe?
Right.
That's the concern.
Right. Or like people be like, what the hell is that? Like no one has rosemary in their front yard.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
There's a cheese in California, the Harley Farms goat cheese.
Oh, have you seen those? On it?
Yeah, and they have these little beautiful edible flowers on top that come just from their garden. They're organic flowers from their garden. And as a retailer, it's really nice to have that kind of touch of home on the product that you're selling.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It really does make it kind of more intimate in a way. Even though you're still buying a product to eat it, but
Yeah. Right. No, well, I always like to say Salvatore is our most local cheese. We try to source the most local cheese possible. And I mean, I live in Carroll Gardens on 4th Place, and you guys are just a couple blocks away. And so I say, you know.
Right. It's pretty local.
Yeah. Can't get much more local than that. So Salvatore, so his way of life and running his business, has he been to see your operation here in New York yet?
He hasn't been here. We're trying to lure him over. I mean, like, he's the kind of guy that doesn't have a computer. Like, his English is getting there, but...
Parliamo italiano.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
No, has he been to the U.S. before?
I don't think so. Okay. Like, definitely not to New York. We've talked about New York, and I don't think he's been to the U.S.
Wow.
I could be wrong. Salvatore, if you're hearing this, you can call in.
like, non è vero.
But we've been over there. We just went to a trip there in February, and we had a great, great, great time. It had been, like, 4 years that had passed since we... saw each other last, and in those 4 years we kind of started this company, and although he has known all about it in the meantime, it was really, really, really cool to get back over there and touch base with him. And
did you bring him some cheese?
Well, I didn't bring him some cheese. I didn't, because it was a long flight, and we would have had to.
It's hard for a fresh cheese.
Yeah.
Do you stay in pretty constant touch? Like, how often do you talk to him?
Well, Rachel's my Italian is like, I have the hand motions, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Which is so subtle and important. The Italian hand motions. It's funny. My boyfriend tells me he lived in Italy for a little while, and you know, he would go, you know, if somebody pissed him off, he would go straight for, you know, flipping him the bird. And they're like, no. Right. They're like, there are 4 things that you do before you get to flipping them the bird. Like,
right.
You know, the handshake, like the flip off the bottom of the chin.
Yep.
Like, the fist shake or something. And then
you got to go in that order.
Yeah.
Before.
Yeah, exactly.
He was telling me about this, like, there's, in that vein, if someone's kind of like jerking your chain, you can do those 4 things. And then the next thing is you kind of like touch them and push them off, not like in an aggressive way, but the amount of pressure that you put on like determines, like there's such a language in that. So even beyond the like
the gesticulations,
there's like there's even further things that you can do.
Like
in America, it's like we're gonna punch you or not.
Yeah.
But in Italy, you can maybe
get a little bit of something. That's very funny. That's like the American handshake. You know, it's like the firm handshake. It's like, very, you know, telling. Somebody means business.
It's very telling.
Or, you know, yeah, that's very funny. Well, if I ever get into a bar fight in Italy, I'm going to remember that.
Well, I don't know if it works for like real like altercations, but if you're like, you know, just busting someone's chops.
If you're having a spirited discussion.
Exactly. Yeah. Which they do well over there.
Oh, absolutely.
So yeah, Rachel just talked to him yesterday. On his like ridiculous like medieval you know estate, I would call, but they call it like their yard. He's this like gorgeous like olive grove, and he harvests them and makes olive oil for his Anateca. And we kind of roped him into producing, and we're going to import it. So
the oil. Ooh, that's
what exciting. What could make Salvatore ricotta any better? Drizzled with
this
delicious
oil,
olive oil.
It's ridiculous, this oil. And he's so funny. Like, we were like, all right, Salvatore, like, what olives are here? Because, you know, Americans are like, what varietal is that? And
because I have no idea what I'm talking about. But if I say that, then I'm going to intimidate you a little bit.
Okay. Sorry, fellow Americans.
Me too. It's all a learning process.
And I'm interested in that stuff, too. So that was one of the reasons I was asking, too. Like, what kind of trees are these? La, la, la. And he's like,
old.
These are my olive trees.
Salvatore olives.
Yeah, like, what kind of olive oil is this? It's like my olive oil. Obviously. And that's it. Like, end of conversation, period. And it works for me. I'm like, great. It tastes great.
The Salvatore
great.
Ricotta. The Salvatore oil.
So, yeah, we're working out the logistics, which is great for many reasons, but it's also great because we get to talk to them a lot, and like, they're fabulous.
And stay in touch. Well, we have to take a very, very quick break. And when we come back, we will. I want to talk more about your trip and what other things you brought back with you besides a pending olive oil business.
All right.
Stay with us on Cutting the Curd.
Quando ti guardano gli altri, io fremo perché la tua bellezza la voglio soltanto per me. No, non è la gelosia, so che tu sei sempre mia. Che mi strugge non so io neppure cos'è, ma non temere, non sono geloso di te.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and our show today has been produced and engineered, no easy feat, by Nat Wiener. So we are here today with Betsy and Rachel Devine from Salvatore Ricotta, as well as Katrina Vahedi, who is co-hosting today. And we are starting each segment, and maybe ending each segment, with a poem that we've written today at the shop about Salvatore Ricotta.
Many odes to ricotta.
Yes. And this ode is in the form of a limerick, much like the first one. So I'm going to give it a go. There once was a man, Salvatore. His cheese had a beautiful story. Thanks to two girls from Brooklyn who started a cooking, his name now lives on in glory.
Nice.
So good. He'll be so honored.
Can you translate that into Italian for him?
Yes, I'm totally going to. And make
it
rhyme.
Translate it right now, because I love when you speak Italian.
Hell
just make it up.
Hell no.
So Rachel is here with us, which is very fun. She made it for the second half of the show. When we left off, we were talking about your trip to Italy and how you were going to... Well, it's very interesting because Betsy was saying that more than the cheese itself, the reason that you named your company after this gentleman, Salvatore, was because, you know, you loved kind of his way of life and his way of being. And so it's very interesting that you're incorporating other aspects of his life and now actually the land that he lives on, you know, into right. your business as well through the olive oil.
Yeah. You know what? It's kind of like I just thought of this like terroir is like an expression of like the land. But it's weird. Like we've taken that a step further, like to like an individual. I don't know what the word is for that, but like
Salvatore War.
Yes.
Manoir.
Yeah. Exactly. Manoir.
Doesn't have quite the same ring to it.
We'll work on it. You guys are the linguists, so I'll put that in your court.
Oh, yeah.
Coming up soon. He's just such like a larger-than-life character. He kind of lends himself to kind of wanting to like be in his world of, you know, of, like, food and wine. And, you know, when you go to his house and he has these like beautiful like rolling hills of olives, like you're just like, oh, my goodness, I want to incorporate this somehow.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's and he's just a really great guy, too. So,
yes.
How old is the Salvatore character?
What do you think? I would say like 50s, early. I was going to say 40s.
No, he's like 50s.
I don't know.
50s.
He looks good, though.
He's living the life.
And him and his wife are hysterical. His wife is Stella, and she's the sassiest woman on the planet. Like, she just...
Loves the sass.
I know. She's
a sasser.
Like, Italian sass. And she's, like, super sarcastic.
Swiss Marlboros.
Yeah. Like, she like, is... Oh, she's so much fun. And they're a good pair, because they, you know, they definitely, like, challenge each other, and they're just, like, a really, like, they're a great couple.
Actually, when we were hanging out... we had dinner, and they cooked, like, this amazing, like, Tuscan feast. But just to get back to the two of them, like, we kind of got into an altercation with Salvatore about...
Which is normal in Italy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, I come from, argument. Like, a waspy, like... put it under the rug, family. So
just ignore that.
Like,
yeah,
to go
we don't
to
have
Italy,
any
I'm
problems
like,
or
oh
any differences. We're all the same. No, we agree.
It's like an art. It's just so
it's
crazy.
Beautiful.
It's beautiful, fun. But it took me a minute to like not have an anxiety attack over like everyone screaming all the time.
So you got into an altercation.
Well, this is like an interesting topic, I think, about our business and like maybe some bigger issues about, you know, tradition versus non-tradition, America versus most of the rest of the world. Like, the way our recipe works with ricotta is not technically a ricotta. Like, to be frank, it's not. Like,
now, why?
Ricotta, like, definition means recooked and to...
So you're making it with kind of the remnants... with whole milk,
traditionally,
but with part skim milk.
Traditionally, it's a byproduct. So you make one cheese, and then what you have left over, then you recook it, and that's the ricotta. But since we're starting with whole milk, it's kind of like, for these Italians that have been doing this for so many years, it's like, what? You're doing what? That's not ricotta. No. Like, that's not our definition that we've had for, you know, hundreds of years. And so that was definitely, like, a source of, like, what the hell are you Brooklyn girls doing over there?
It's kind of, you know, talk about Brooklyn, like, you know, birthplace of, like, red sauce cooking, you know. Italian-American food does not resemble really, even in the slightest. A real Italian cooking. I mean,
no, it doesn't.
And so, but
sometimes
not
we're better, sometimes we're worse.
Yeah. No, not saying that your ricotta is like that, because it's divine, no pun intended. But you know, it's a different thing. So you got into an altercation.
We got into it. It was fun, but it was definitely, there was a point in the argument. Like, this was like after like copious amounts of wine and like this huge steak and like all, you know, it was like at the end, and there was definitely a point where like we weren't understanding each other, and it wasn't a language thing. It was like, And he basically was like, well, why would you take like an expensive product like whole milk?
Sure.
And, you know, it's like, it's silly. You could be making two cheeses out of that. Like, why wow. would you do why that? Make
just interesting.
One? Right, right.
Well, that's so interesting, too, because I was thinking about, you know, just the lifestyle that you were talking about, which drew you to this product in the first place and this guy. And, you know, that is also very different from what we all know growing up in the States, like right. having the family house, staying in the town where you were born, having the family land that has many different uses to like kind of provide different things for right. your own sustenance and right. maybe also a little bit to sell to other people. And then the community that goes along with it, for better or for worse, you know,
right.
being part of this this small town community and being tied to the place where you're from. And so, yeah, I guess when you grow up like that, like those rules and that sense of tradition is so ingrained.
I mean, it's so ingrained and it's like so important too. Like obviously it's almost been a means of survival, and like the namesake of Salvatore that we chose was to kind of tap into that. But it's weird because there is this other side to what we're doing that is like so American right. and so like
that's yeah, where you're coming from.
Here's right. this like, you know, maybe this kind of peasant cheese. What would happen if we kind of elevated yeah. it to something that's richer and greater and more decadent? And like that's kind of American if we're gonna stereotype. Yeah.
Sure.
That's what a lot of Americans are used to when they buy ricotta. They're often buying whole
milk. They buy whole milk ricotta.
Without right. even thinking about it.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. And that's kind of, I feel like, just to interrupt for two quick seconds, I mean, that's the beauty of like the sort of cheese, definitely the cheese revolution that's going on in this country, but also with beer and with wine. You know, yeah. people are breaking rules that have been established mm-hmm. for yeah. centuries in Europe. And sometimes, you know, depending on what their motives are, it could turn out to be some sort of over-the-top kind of schlock, or it could turn out to be something really pure and beautiful, just a different combination of elements. Right. You know?
Yeah. And yeah. we definitely got into that part of the discussion with Salvatore, too. And, you know, I'm in the wine business, and there's so many examples. But, like, one right in his backyard is this whole Super Tuscan thing. How,
sure.
you know, people weren't really allowed to, you know, they had to work in these, like, very restricting confines. And they
well,
were
explain
like,
those confines.
Well, I mean, basically, there's this kind of regulating body, and they say, oh, you can only use this grape, you can't use this grape here, and there
are talking about the DOP?
Yeah, well, it's the DOCG. It's like the okay. basically the equivalent of that for wine.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's four letters. It's even more serious.
Yeah. Okay. So well, there's serious. Also, there's a DOC and a DOCG, and that is like, that's when like, that's like guaranteed. That's what the G stands for.
That sounds like rapper upsmanship.
Totally. It's like guaranteed. Exactly. So basically, there are these producers that were like, you know what? We're going to make amazing wine and we're going to do whatever the hell we want. And, you know, now it's like Super Tuscan is a name that like everyone's heard now. And these wines have really become, you know, kind of this example of like, you know what? We appreciate this tradition. You guys have that. That's great. We're going to do what we want to do.
They're rebels.
Yeah. And it's worked out really well for them. I mean, the name Super Tuscan, like it almost is like, you know, people are like, whoa, Super Tuscan. And, you know, it's really, it's just, you know, one of the examples. There's so many examples of how right. that's happened.
It comes up so much in food. It comes up in all areas of life, but food and wine, like, can you call any cheese that resembles Parmesan, Parmesan? Can you call any champagne that resembles champagne, champagne? No, you can't. Yeah. You know, like, it's these weird boundaries that have been around for so long, and these rules and regulations, and many of them have been set up to, like, guarantee survival for communities. But in I don't know, it's interesting to push those lines back or not. I mean, whatever you want. Personally, I think it's interesting to kind of mess with it and see what happens.
Absolutely. So where do you think the, I mean, where for you guys, where does the, I don't know, I mean, because you've taken ricotta and you've made it Salvatore, which is something different from, you know, from your average ricotta. I definitely, I don't know, is your ricotta the Super Tuscan of cheese?
I don't know. I mean, in a way, maybe not, because we're not. Okay.
You're not in Italy.
We're not in Italy, but in the sense of, like, are we basically kind of taking something and running with it? Yes. And that is true. Like, even, okay, the cheese is really, like, dense and creamy, and, like, that's because, like, I hang it for a really long time, but, like, normally ricotta is not hung that long. I just hang it that long because I like it.
So it's further removed from the original product.
Right, so...
And so that's very interesting. So that kind of brings it full circle, because artisans in general, especially cheesemakers throughout the ages, you know, there were tons of producers of... You know, Tom de Savoie. There were tons of producers of Fantina. There were tons of producers of, you name any, you know, artisan cheese from Europe. And in the, you know, those cheeses were all generally similar because of the region that they were produced in, because of the climactic conditions, because of the animals, because of, you know, the seasonality and the tradition there. But each cheesemaker had his or her own stamp, you know, that would make their products slightly different from everybody else's, because it was almost, it's a matter of pride for the cheesemaker, but it's, and you know, it's almost a measure of insurance that your cheese is going to be something very different, very special.
Right.
So in a way, you know, that's kind of what you guys are doing. You're just taking this product, but doing it your own way, so that it is recognizable from every other ricotta.
And I think that it's kind of like our interpretation too, which is another way of looking at it. It's like, we totally appreciate and love ricotta, and this is how, this is how we like it, and this is our interpretation of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so you have now, you've got the plain, which you've had since the very get-go. You have the smoky, which is incredible.
Is it time for a haiku?
I think maybe it's time for a haiku. About smoky ricotta.
So we often describe the smoky ricotta as tasting kind of like toasted marshmallows without all the extra sugar, because it's like sweet and creamy and a little bit toasty and kind of like a campfire. toasty marshmallow.
Welcome. I think this is going to be the dirty one.
Welcome to the light of day. You complete my mouth.
Bravo.
Sorry, ode to smoky ricotta.
Bravo.
I don't know if dirty, but it was definitely sensual.
Yeah, and the voice. Sensual.
I felt stirring in my legs. Something, I don't know. Yeah.
Katrina had smoky ricotta for breakfast this morning. Let it be known.
It completed my mouth.
Yeah.
It's really good with smoked salmon too, like on a bagel.
Oh my God, it's true.
It was great with blueberries today.
Yeah.
Or bourbon. I had it with bourbon this afternoon, actually, and that was really good.
And
yeah, I know, it was part of a tasting. It was a, you know, it was for work.
Yeah,
strictly business
in quotation marks. But so I think we just have a minute or so left. But so what's next for Salvatore?
So what's next is we're gonna take on the behemoth that is mozzarella. So it's to be determined whether we're gonna maybe tweak it a little bit, but I think our goal is just to make a great mozzarella that's made from curds to the whole pulling process, which is kind of rare here. It's usually Americans kind of like buy the curd from somewhere else,
from Polio.
That's a huge producer, literally, like, you know, that's one of the biggest ones. So our goal is to, like, make the curd.
Yeah.
Maybe even sell the curd, but also pull it.
Yeah.
That's the next project. So.
All in Brooklyn. Keeping it real.
I mean, I love the Italian-American shops that still exist but are dying out, that do the fresh ricotta, do the pulling of the mozzarella, and the, you know, in Queens and in Brooklyn, and I think that's so cool, and if we can contribute to that kind of tradition, we'd be psyched.
It should become reintroduced as part of our sort of cheese vernacular, to be able to get that stuff made, you know, right in your neighborhood.
Yeah, and then eat it same day. I mean, that's how it was intended.
Yeah, because that's the name of the game with this stuff. It's like, the fresher it is, the better. And if it's made here, we're happy to supply.
I read an article a little while ago that was comparing refrigerated mozzarella with mozzarella that hadn't been refrigerated. Yeah. And there was actually a big difference.
It's a night huge difference.
Even totally. If they're both made in the same day, yeah. You can put one in the fridge it and take it out.
It kind of seizes up and yeah, it's not the same.
The texture of the proteins.
It's a little tense.
It's like
I'd be tense if I got put into a refrigerator.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, it would not be pleasant at all. Well, so maybe we can have our first tasting of Salvatore mozzarella in the studio here at the Heritage Radio Network.
You'll be our first stop, Miss Anne Saxaby.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for coming out to do the show. And now we're going to go in and eat some pizza with mozzarella on top.
So excited.
And we will catch you guys next week on Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.